Yeah, yes. You just caught me in the street there.
Fruitcake. I don't know if you like them or not.
Well, I'll tell you. Fruitcake? Who doesn't like fruitcake?
Well, if you like it, some people don't, you know. I thought, where's Faye? I bet she's in town teaching, huh?
I tell you, she had to go in a letter.
Uh-huh.
Because Jean had been in the hospital, and she just went in there.
Jean Herbert?
Mm.
Oh.
Well, let me tell you, you got hit just in time.
What'd you fix?
They've been fixed.
What are they?
I'll tell you what they are. I was just eating some
sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
Oh, they're delicious.
Yeah. Well, now let me tell you, I don't know whether they're all good and warm or not. Mm-hmm. Try some. Put some butter on it.
Okay. Want me to sit here?
Yeah. I don't know whether.
Ward's still home. He's not feeling very good today.
Huh?
He stayed home.
I don't know
what it is. He's just not feeling good at all.
That orange is still hadn't warmed up yet. It's been in here 24 hours.
It is cold. Our house is awful cold.
I said, get it down at the bottom, it's warmer. See, I just used, I didn't have to. I used the, the double boiler, and I don't have a double boiler.
Mm-hmm. Made your own.
Just made my own, and it leaks.
If you're going to cook, you're going to have to get some new pots and pans.
Yeah. This, you see, you have a piece of bread. See, you can just eat, humor yourself, you see. Just please yourself. Just eat sweet potatoes for lunch. Just sit down and eat sweet potatoes.
Mm-hmm. Your thumb's looking a lot better, Guy. Finally got the other one that you...
Oh, yes. Yes. Finally. I never thought it would do some again.
Yeah. There's a guy that comes into work that's carpenter. Every week he messes that thumb. I said, you need to go into a new profession.
Well, I'm telling you, once that nail goes, you got no protection there.
No, his has gone 3 times. And he said... Sometimes 2 or 3 times on each finger. He loves them that many times. I couldn't believe it.
You've got your cattle down there, but you sold the herd.
Yeah, they don't have any grass.
Oh.
And I didn't want them to go over there and live on hay. That hay won't sustain anything. You see, it don't. The hay don't sustain your horses. You don't need good hay.
Yeah.
Or you need something to fill them.
Well, Guy, Lori knows these people on Wakahuda Road where the cattle... They don't feed them, and one of them, they can't even get up off their knees.
Oh, yeah.
And what do you do with people?
They throw them home, that's it.
You report them.
What do you report them to?
Sheriff.
Really?
Cattlemen Association.
So then will they go out and tell, see, she's friends with their daughter.
That's the thing, I don't want to get her in trouble. But they just have 11 cows, but this one cow is so malnutrition. They've got a colt they're doing this with, too.
Yeah.
So malnutrition that, can't even get up. And now they've started trying to give her grain since she can't get up.
It's too late, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Why are some people like that, Guy?
I don't know. We've got one out of here. We've got all those cows, you know, on the Tuscaloosa over there. He never feeds.
He feeds them on whatever grass there is.
Whatever there is, you see.
Mm-hmm. Well, that'd be... Something happened to people like
here's
that.
More. Good for you.
They
don't make you fat. They're just nourishing.
I like sweet potatoes. These really are delicious potatoes. Faye was right when she said they're especially good.
Well, they're the worst potatoes I ever saw. And I tell you what, Faye baked some, and they were just as hard and tasteless. custy?
I boiled them.
That's right. So,
I
told Faye she's going to have to boil them. And you know what? They turned out first rate. They taste just like good potatoes once you boil them.
Mm-hmm. I did what she told me. She said put a little brown sugar in them. And she's got white
You tried some of these?
Mm-hmm. She brought us a little.
Oh, did she?
Yeah. Wait, I'm going to get this going.
Well, I never saw. We planted in the wrong sign. We had good vines, but we didn't have anything under them. You've heard people talk about that.
Nothing under them, huh?
No, sir. We didn't have. We had nothing under the ground. It's all on top.
Well, Lori's all finished now, aren't you, Lori?
Mm-hmm.
With you, she's not signed up for next quarter.
I'm gonna work next quarter instead. Tired of it already.
Why shouldn't a person get tired of it every now and then?
Well.
This steady.
Too much school.
Well, I went till July, end of July, and I started in September.
And she went all summer with that high school.
I have a piece
program.
Of fried cheese.
So that made it a pretty full year for her to go all summer to summer.
I think that's what I'm interested in.
Where's Debbie today?
Debbie?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they was all out here yesterday and went down to Grove.
Oh.
And she went in with them, with her family, and she'd been out here pretty steady.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how she stayed. You know, it's nice out here just for a day at a time, but she stays. I don't see how she stays as much as she works, but
she's working now, or you mean she's writing?
She works when she's out here. She writes. No, she hadn't been writing much. We've been trying to get hold of some things and not just have everything scratchy.
Mm-hmm. Is she riding Noopy?
No.
Nobody's riding Noopy.
Nobody riding at all. Mm-mm. Nobody riding at all.
Not good for the horses.
No. They need some company. I do indeed.
Mm-hmm.
We see them up there with their heads down, not looking up or around, up there on that hill up there.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing up there but old, but old, no time for moody grass. It's dead.
Mm-hmm. And how many days is Faye teaching in town?
Let me tell you, she goes in 2 or 3 days a week, I think,
mm-hmm.
to teach.
Busy.
And then other days, something on.
It'd be a hard job. I know Anna Lukowicz, she's got 40 piano students a week. I think must take a lot of.
Gee whiz, that takes.
Take a lot out of me.
Oh, it does. You know it does.
Faye's special. She can do that. I don't think I could have 40 piano students a week and survive it.
Faye? Oh, she's not made of leather. She works pretty hard with some of them, but she don't have never spread that thin.
Well, do you know yesterday we tried to get hay? We tried Melrose, we tried Kelly's Stud Farm, and we called the neighbors, the Bartons, and they had run out too.
Well, I'm gonna.
And they said, well, when you find somebody, let us know. So all we need is a little hay to tide us over till we get out and get a big load of it somewhere. Now, I got 8 of them from Kelly's Stud Farm. They lasted us pretty good, didn't they, Lori? About 6 weeks or so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I called him, and he said, well, he wanted to see if it was how long a winter it was before he sold more, you know.
Yeah.
So he was kind of holding out for that. But we got those 8 puppies, see, and I got them in hay. They love it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I used quite a bit of the horse's hay to make those puppies
no,
warm and comfortable.
Pine needles.
Yeah, we should use pine needles for the puppies, and we didn't.
Well, I think they ought to. They deserve a little hay.
Yeah, well, they're in the garage. If you come by, nobody's there. Just take a peek. They're right in.
8 of them still.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, 8
there.
Yelling. 8 of them yelling at the top of their lungs.
We're giving most of them away, actually.
Well, have you?
Well, we're going to be.
Oh, and I think of that that beautiful dog you had, and I got to get a dog too now, you see.
You want one of these puppies, guys?
No, I wanted that one that you didn't.
Duchess,
yes.
A Duchess was a good dog. She would have been the perfect dog for you.
I just didn't have enough.
But if you got a puppy, the thing about that, you can pretty much train her to what from the start to what you do and don't.
All I want to do is bark.
Well, a shepherd will do.
They
that.
Already are barking.
But
all
they
eight
need
of them.
Special training according to whose owner they're going to, because they can be trained for police work on down to just family pet.
Yeah, I don't want a pet. I just want them to bark.
Be out there and let you know when somebody's coming.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, maybe we ought to give you one of these puppies. We probably never have another batch.
They grow up pretty fast, don't they?
6 months, they'd be full size.
6 months?
Yeah, in June. This is a perfect place for a big dog. They're hard. It's hard to have them in town.
Yeah.
Well, our place is all right, but if you had less than an acre,
yeah.
Not really fair to the dog.
Not really fair.
Mm-hmm. But now, see, we'll be selling them Christmas, and I'll give you one if you let me know, you and Faye. I'll save one and give it to you as your Christmas present. You'd like one. I think the beauty of taking it young would be that you could pretty much train it from the start, just to what you do and don't want it to do, and it is travel with you and so on.
Well, shepherds, though, well, they, when they're little, they get attached to one person or two people, maybe, and then they never want to leave them.
Would you want a male or a female?
I don't care, just so they don't breed.
We're going to take our cat in and get her fixed. We got those kittens from that last batch. We're going to get all of them fixed. So that I hope that's the end of cats for us, you know, we fixed them. They're not expensive. It costs about 30 cents a day to feed those three.
Yeah.
So it's not bad if we get them fixed so we don't have any more coming along.
Yeah. We don't need any more cats.
Yeah.
But they're pleasant company.
They come so fast.
Yeah, they do come fast. Every 2 months, they have another... heat, so to watch out for that. So
okay.
she should call the sheriff to tell about these people that aren't feeding.
Call the county agent. See what he says. That's the Cattlemen's Association.
Would it be listed under cattlemen, you suppose?
No, just county agent.
County agent. Agricultural agent.
County agent, as they call him.
Yeah. Well, you know, you hate to do that, Guy, but if somebody doesn't take up for the cows, who will? I mean,
who
they
will?
Can't do it themselves.
No. And they shouldn't, nobody should have woods cows anymore.
These are, I don't think they're woods cows.
You see, when I came out here, I didn't intend to live here. I've told you this. I thought I'd have somebody live out here and raise cattle or cucumbers or whatever they want to do, and I'd just be on the fringe and help them and be and you know have a place to go.
Yeah.
Maybe make a little bit off of it and be able to pay for the place. Well, it didn't work out. Oh, they'd come out here and they were bruisers. I mean, they wanted to just take everything. And I had an awful time with, I had three families out here, all of them were, and they were all nice, respectable families, and they really left me in a hole. So I thought, well, I'll get me some old steers. That's the thing you do, you know. Just rough things and put them out there, you know. Well, what it turned out was, you see, unless I kept the pastures up, the grass wasn't any good.
Mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't grow much.
Mm-hmm.
They'd just be woods cattle. And I got sensitive to it. I just didn't want to look at those old bony animals around the place. Well, that cut me off. That was one. That was my. Now this is. See, this is this is what I was looking for, and I didn't know exactly what. I was looking for some way to get entry into the countryside. Well, I took the thing that happened to me. It was accidental, really. I went to Sunday school, and Miss Anna was a teacher. Well, you see, she had more friends than anyone else in the whole country. And I was one of her devoted followers, you see. For several years, long as she lived, she was upwards of 80 when I first knew her. She died in 95. And she hadn't been able to teach for several, 2 or 3 years. Well, that got me into Sunday school. And what I found was that in Sunday school, about all I did was see about the worst side of people. And it didn't get me anywhere. All it did was get me a bad name, you see. Anything I'd say was out of order. You imagine me in Sunday school talking about baptism with people who believe in baptism. I'm not even interested in it. Well, you see, I've just committed one blunder after another all my life, but especially out here. But you see, I didn't know how to back out of something. I thought the thing was to stay with it, and something would happen. Well, I used to get feed from B&G up there, and it was out of my way, and I'd call up there and ask him if he had feed, and he said, oh, yes, and I get up there, he didn't have any. Way up there. And all I could do was haul in my car, you see, and you can't haul feed in your car. Well, I took that old virtue of perseverance, you see, or of something, and it was all wrong. So, it just accidentally, I learned a few things down here, but mostly I blundered. That's the truth. Now, you see, I know how to get into the countryside. I know how to get into just about any sort of culture, but it was just purely accidental that I ever found out. It was, in a way, you see, just events pushed me into it. I could go into it. But it's, and you can't pass on things like that. People don't listen to you.
You find you're spending most of your time out here, Guy, or are you back in town very often?
Now? Let me tell you, I'm out here most of the time, and the thing of it is, I've been bogged down at the typewriter, but I'm about to clear that up. So I think I'll get in circulation a little bit now. I enjoy being in circulation.
What's the matter with Jean Herbert?
I don't know. She just went to the hospital for some reason.
Well, she's all right.
I almost went the other day, and my kidney medicine backfired on me.
Oh,
I went for a day without going to the potty.
Oh, dear. Oh, goodness, that's scary.
So, if I'd went, he'd say, well, Miles in the hospital, he couldn't go to the potty. I ought to have some reason for going to the hospital that interests people, shouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, I guess we better get going, Guy. We've got, do you know that, have you heard of that movie series that comes once a month? It's plays on, well, we got tickets this afternoon.
Oh, have you?
For 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock?
Mm-hmm.
Gee whiz, you better get loaded.
Well, only takes us 10 minutes to get back to town.
Not much, not too much.
I'm going to come out one afternoon and really go over to McNopey and spend some time. There's some fabric there I want to get. That I've seen, and it's 100% cotton. And most of these fabrics that I've been quilting with, they're a combination of polyester and cotton, and they're just harder to deal with. There must be a firmer knit or a weave, and you just can't beat your old 100% cotton for flexibility. You can go through those fabrics, two and three layers of them, easily to quilt. But you get those man-made fibers in there, and they're just tough as nylon, to, you know. And so I want to buy this old store. They're selling out all the fabrics, and I'm just going to buy and have about $10 worth of fabric while I can. You just can't find 100% cotton. It's just not being made anymore. Well, this one is this old man on the left as you go in. Just in
the start. I want to buy a lot of plain material or something and make a skirt that, you know, it's just, you can, if you twirl it, goes straight out, it's got, make it that full.
Circle.
Yeah, circle skirts. I'll try that. See if that works.
Lauren got three horses in that pen today because she brought home, Angelina was having colic, and she
brought her home. I walked her home in the rain.
Well, she's busy ruling the roost.
I tell you, that colic will keep them busy, won't it?
No, it keeps you busy. You got to walk them all the time.
Yeah. Let me tell you, I want you all to come out here. You talk to town, but you can come out here, too. I want to talk about old Raven Gap.
Yeah, I need to get back up and see those people.
I've picked up new points on that since I've seen you.
Uh-huh.
Way, somebody ordered you going to get loaded.
Yeah, what were you going to say?
Somebody ought to start something like that. And
yeah.
I'm not much at that starting, you see, that sort of thing. I'm just a bookman, just a typist. I don't.
Well, Guy, they don't really have anybody in folklore anymore, do they? I mean, when Morris went out...
People in folklore don't do anything like that.
They're supposed to. That's supposed to be their field.
They don't... You name me somebody in folklore that ever gets away from the cubicle.
That's probably true. But that's not what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
They'll go to India and collect the stuff over there.
But it's still in a cubicle.
But that's the kind of person that you should, you know, should be interested in doing it.
Yes. And that would be nice to have some connection like that.
Yeah.
I thought the library thing might turn in that direction, but I'll tell you sometime in just so many words what happened to that, and it was an impossible situation.
Yeah, no, I don't think library, but I think they wouldn't know what to do with it. But somebody in folklore who's not so academic that he can't, you know, take the materials at hand in the area and do something with them.
Well, let me tell you, the library is more loose-jointed than any of the departments.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'd got the right hearing over there, or if they'd listened to me just a little bit, but they didn't listen to me. They just worked it out themselves for my benefit. I mean, they were working for my interest, but it all went in a direction I knew wouldn't work after I saw what they were doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can tell you very briefly what it was. they followed that hunch that I had, you see, that I didn't want to put them in there 50 years later, let somebody open them up. If they did, they wouldn't pay any more attention to them than they do now.
Mm-hmm.
What I said was, open up the ones that we can.
Mm-hmm.
And what they proposed to do was, through the financial work, they would interest the various departments, anthropology and speech and one thing and another, half a dozen of them. And it would have gone through like that, except it never would have worked. And then they got me in an... For the simple reason is that anthropology and speech are not interested in anything any more than folklore is.
Mm-hmm.
They won't get out of the cubicle.
Maybe somebody will come along in folklore yet. You know,
folklore,
they were looking
folklore
for one last
doesn't do it.
Well, maybe one will. They're still looking for one.
Not anything connected with the university that I have found will get out of the cubicle.
Well, they're still trying to find somebody to take that post. Maybe the new one will be different.
Well, I think I'll have to wait for Florida, sort of.
Take an interest in that. Oh, dear. Well, she's a pretty good girl, this old gal, I'll tell you.
Well,
she's going to ride horses this spring and forget about the academic world for a while.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm tired of
it. Like we go out and
I've been riding my horses a little bit.
And I finally gave them to him, and he was reading those papers.
Yeah.
And he read one, and read another, and then he read another. And two of them were cut out of a magazine. One was typed, and I said, "Well, this was a real private paper, and Chris had typed that personally, transcribed it from a tape." Well, the papers were all absolutely identical. A person like that talks; they say about all they need to say in two paragraphs. The rest of it was highly repetitive.
Yeah.
It's a very simple system. You believe on me, do this, do that, and the other.
Yeah.
And Broward read these three papers, and he discarded the two that came out of the magazines and picked up the one that was typewritten. He said, "These other two are just for public information, but this is the real thing." Now, this is strong. And he differentiated between these papers just because I told him this was a private paper. And they're absolutely identical. You couldn't tell a lick of difference between any of them. But he found the one that was private that gives real meaning. And the two, like Broward and David, neither one can't understand why I don't receive inspiration from reading these.
Yeah.
They're sincere.
David doesn't either.
David doesn't either. He was really, well, after we got through with a pretty long discussion one morning, he almost got into tears because he said, "Well, wait, I was just offering you something that's brought happiness to me. And you've refused it."
Well, he doesn't differ from his father then.
Not that much.
Except he won't go to church.
Well, this new religion or whatever doesn't demand that you not continue going to church. See, that's a funny little thing about it.
It doesn't mind.
It doesn't demand that you quit going to these other churches. See, that's another loose-knit thing.
So he can go to his father's
church.
Yes,
it's not against his new belief. See.
But he doesn't go.
Well, he just sort of missed the last two Sundays. He was busy doing other things.
Well, but that doesn't surprise you?
Did he not go?
Yeah.
Or no, huh? No, the only reason, see, he calls it his token church going. He's known for a long time that he goes and to keep his parents up. The only reason he goes. He hasn't had any respect for that church for several months, a year, so.
Well, what does he have respect for? Just this new thing?
Well, this new thing is, he considers it the only answer to the world problem.
Well, he's going in for it.
Oh, yes. The guru says that what he's offering is peace, peace and love, and that's the only way you're going to get it through him. And that's the only way you're going to save the world, through peace and love.
But not through his father's church.
No, his father's church is something different now. See, this is the new savior.
You haven't been to his father's church.
No, God, I haven't. No.
Well. came over here 2 or 3 times, and he was the one who helped me on the some of the bibliography of this stuff. First bibliography I ever had, he got for me.
Now, he wasn't on that. That was just somebody just dropped in. It hadn't been a minister on that tape that I had of yours.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, okay. This man isn't from West Florida, is he?
No.
The minister.
No, he's getting his PhD or his some degree at the university.
Because there's a my fifth grade girlfriend has some relative that was a young fellow that's a minister down here, or is right now, or was the last. I found that out this summer.
I don't know whether it's the same one. I been in touch with him, but he was here for some time, and he was right intelligent fellow. And the only thing I remember about it was that it's just one little group, and they're all aliens in Meganope. Like David's father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Nancarols are down there.
Yeah.
I don't know what their position is. They've got a hold of a piece of money somewhere. She works for the government in town, some school system, and I don't know what he does. And
Jeremy somebody, Rule. I proposed working a little bit with Jeremy, but he had too many irons in the fire and connections and all. He didn't need to work with me. He finds things out. He has a fairly light touch for that type of mind. He married this education professor's daughter, the one who is sort of the window dressing for the place.
From the school up here?
Yes.
Not Coombs?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Coombs? Combs, C-O-O-M?
Combs.
Yeah,
Combs.
He married her daughter?
Yeah.
Well, I'll be damned. I don't know whether we had a class with you or not, but I had a class with one of his daughters. not long about my freshman year there.
Well, one of his daughters.
She was right impressive girl, from my remembrance.
Well, she came out here one time, but I didn't see enough of her. No.
They lived in the Virgin Islands.
Yes, they lived in the Virgin Islands, and they were going back to the Virgin Islands. And he was teaching, and I don't know what the religious connection was. He was taking his degree in religion. Curious.
Yeah, I think I told you about my old girlfriend dating. She's dating an Episcopal minister.
Yeah.
And he's divorced. He can't marry her or he loses his job.
Faye asked him to ask a blessing, and he said the man is priest in his own house. Right, he got me told right quick, you see.
Well, that's all right.
Yeah.
Well, I'd give him a star for that one.
Yeah, he's not a do-gooder, exactly.
Well, I was supposed to make contact with this fellow because Barbara said that I would enjoy him, and I mentioned him to David, and David says, no, you wouldn't enjoy him. Whoever she was talking about, he knew who it was.
he's he's right. His footwork is right easy.
This minister, my friend Barber's dating, is he's got the way of the world on him. He came over that night I was visiting her. And there's nothing light about him. Well, I don't see too much hope for the old church. I lost all hope when they found out God was dead and tried to rebuild him and make that concrete Christ. Once they started making the concrete Christ, I think they lost on that altogether. I mean, that was just signaling the time was up. They didn't lose. That was an interesting time. Remember, when I was down here, we fooled with that just a little bit, that God is dead thing. And that's forgotten now. People don't remember that.
Yeah.
You know, Wade, I'm very particular now, the terms in which I think. And unless they seem fairly fruitful, I just don't pick them up. I mean, I just don't let them go through my mind.
You got an effective filter.
And yes, and so much of that. Now this is just recent. You see, this has come through this stuff we've done out here, and it's a little on the little extreme. But so much of the religious stuff leads nowhere, and it's fruitful in hardly any sense of the word, and it's just hard worth even thinking about. So much of it.
I've rather dismissed it as just balling the whole group up and just calling them an apologist or whatever. That's the only term I can think, and I don't know really what that means. They spend all their time making excuses about things or trying to add up meaningless situations. And it doesn't produce anything for me. I mean, you wouldn't even read the first word in this those papers they gave me from that guru. I read it out of... so that I could say I read it to the people that are talking about it. You wouldn't read the first two words of it. Nope, no sense. Nothing. Not when you've been fed on decent fare.
But it has occupied a whole lot of soul. At one time or another.
Hell, he's got a whole fleet of people doing copy work for him, guy. That he utters. Nixon taped it and was secretive. He tapes it and gets it written down and copied and put in a book or something.
He didn't want any secrets.
He's got ulcers. I missed the picture. There's a great picture in Time magazine. This guy came up with a bouquet of flowers all the way up to the guru, and he dropped the flowers and he hit a pie shut in his face. And the picture of him, he's wiping, you know, brown and fat anyhow. And the cream pie in his face, he's wiping out. And the devotees damn near killed the guy, beat up on him, gave him a brain concussion. They gave him a taste of peace and love right there on the spot. All the same.
Your truck, your van was so big, Wade. Isn't it bigger than it used to be?
I've been feeding it.
I drove up and I remember it being so large.
It is large.
It's huge.
You know, it's
feed it.
It's about 18 inches shorter than your Oldsmobile.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
What is it gain?
It just starts right at that end and goes straight up. Starts at that end and goes straight up. And your car has got all this humping and bumping and everything. It just goes up a little bit right in the middle. It's really something. I was running around with a guy in town. He had a Chevrolet station wagon. And we pulled up to this place together. It had the curb thing, so your front wheels stop. Well, I got out and I said, "This really is a big truck, isn't it?" He said, "Yeah, that's a monster." I said, "Come around back." Go around back. His car's sticking out that much further than the truck.
Well, that's true. It just.
Yeah, it does. It is big. It's a very big thing. But people don't realize how big their cars are.
Wheelbase.
Yeah. Well, my wheelbase is longer.
So
you've got in the standard car, they've got generally that much in the rear hanging over, or a great deal.
Oh, yeah.
And you add the bumper and everything else. And my overhang's hardly that much.
Mm-hmm.
To the long wheelbase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would have to be.
I don't really know what the story is with that. I don't know. They make a van that's shorter, and if I had bought one, I'd have bought the shorter one. You know, gotten a new one.
That was all you needed.
Yeah. Those are real handy looking little things, those short ones.
Now, you haven't hauled much in it, but what you haul, you need it.
I feel it's been a worthwhile machine.
Already.
Mm-hmm. And especially every time I get into repairs. You gotta go sheet material. And ordinary vehicle sheet materials generally wind up tying it on the roof. Which means gotta make sure it doesn't blow off, stuff like that. And I just load it all in the back and shut the door.
Yeah.
Plenty of room. And I had to buy 16-foot something the other day. They didn't have it in any other length. And I didn't even have to put a flag on it. There was that much sticking out in the back. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I never thought of that particular advantage, but a lot of times you either have to cut the material up to get it home or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you waste it when you do it that way.
Yeah.
One advantage of buying a long piece is to cut out the sections you need,
yeah,
if you have to get one. See, it's getting so lumber, you just don't buy lumber anymore. It will. You almost have to call everywhere to make sure that they've got this piece of lumber and that piece of lumber. Check out where you're going to.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. It's really tough. And you can't sit here and say, "Well, I'm going to use 1x2s and 2x4s and tongue and groove this and name it off and go in town and buy it." You have to substitute and shift around. Everything's changing. that was going on before the fuel crisis, and now this fuel thing is really zapped plywood, and because it's hit the plywood market so hard, that fiberboard that I built my bedroom out of, well, hell, it's gone up more expensive than plywood almost. I've forgotten what it cost, but it's up $1.50 board, $2 a board more than when I bought it 7 or 8 months ago.
You know, those some of those trucks, like Mr. Eastman has, anyway, he hauls everything with him, takes with him. Some of them have those hooks on the side where you can put a pipe
mm-hmm.
or something long.
Mm-hmm.
Or, of course, if it's maybe some of them it's up above.
Mm-hmm.
But that wouldn't be bad. I don't know how much trouble it'd be to have one of those. Of course, if you had just a pickup truck, it'd be simple enough. But with a body like yours, you'd have to...
They put them on the van. It's easy to do on the roof. On one side, you can put a little thing running down, and you can well, you could haul 20-foot pieces up there, I suppose, to stick out 4 feet either end or something.
Yeah, yeah. And you'd never have much of it.
Mm-hmm. I've seen them on top. Yeah, you know, this fuel thing looks like it might cause us people out here a little bit of a travel problem.
Well, tonight I noticed that not any of the trucks were going fast. That was the first time I've noticed. There were several trucks on the road, but not one of them passed.
Mm-hmm. Well, you people don't have to change your speed habit. You just might have to change your gas habit. You do?
A bit.
Freddie Wood won't have to change his.
50 has been my maximum speed for a long time. I go from 40 to 50. But then you see, I can't go on a busy highway.
It may be nerve-wracking. It used to be. The interstates, they've slowed down.
Yeah.
My last road trip, I was amazed. I drove back. It was Thanksgiving Day. I drove back from West Florida. And a lot of people were driving slow. And I thought to myself, well, I'm in a little bit of hurry to get on home, get into the turkey dinner. And I'll get to the interstate, and I'll speed up, run with the traffic. Well, by dog, they were all doing under 60 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Traffic was. So I stayed right with them. I used to drive 70 at least, and they'd come whizzing by all the time. You could see the speeders easy this time.
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then, here come a car. Meow! Running through the pack. But good Lord, before this all happened, you get out on the interstate at 50 miles an hour, and it's nerve-wracking.
It's dangerous.
And you almost have to turn around and drive backwards so you not get run over. It is. It's something else. I've been, as much as I've driven, I've been worried driving on the interstate when it gets over... Too much traffic just gets. I suppose I don't like it anymore or something. Because
mm-hmm.
those cars start rushing up on you in the back and there's a bunch in front. This feels too crowded. Too many people.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't mean to root in on the supper.
Well, I wasn't much of a supper, but.
Well,
you
got here just in time.
Yeah. Well, I had the best of intentions.
We don't do this too often, you know. Doesn't happen too often.
We don't eat.
We used to eat them. Eat them right occasionally.
Although they're
not,
on office,
but
yeah.
not very much anymore.
We used to get them over at
Bill's.
I used to buy them all the time. I'd buy them 20 at a time.
Think of that.
Uh-huh. 20 at a time and keep them frozen.
Yeah.
And you just cook them 2 minutes on the side. And they're just marvelous. And that was a blow when Bill. I don't buy 20 of anything kind of meat at a time now, but.
Yeah, you have to be friendly with your banker.
Oh.
Be be friendly with your banker and your meat.
And your meat man, too.
The Rogers cuts them for me pretty good. Not my deal.
Not as plentiful anymore.
No, not even at Enterprise.
That's something. Lord, it's really strange the time we're living in, how much things have changed in the last year.
You think it won't? I think it won't affect me, and it does.
Yeah, you look at it that way. Uh-huh. Like Buster still doesn't really believe anything's happening.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
Just doesn't believe anything's really happening. Of course, now the common man understand when the truck drivers are doing something, then something's happening.
Well, I think of all the people we've talked about tonight, I think those truck drivers are the most promising.
They're a force.
Yeah.
I can just see them. I can see them together.
And they are, the ones I see and hear of are family men.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got 3, 4, 5 children back in the suburbs where they have a big house.
God, they've got a lot to lose. A whole lot to lose.
The whole thing.
Yeah, they're just like Sissy and Harry. See, Sissy and Harry are not going to be jeopardized. They're both government people, not for a long time. But these people are paying $300 or $400 a month payments on their house.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of money in it.
Yeah.
If that trucking thing goes under, he'll lose his truck first, then his house, and he'll be back down to zero quick.
Yeah.
So he and doesn't have any profession.
And there won't be any service station for him to work in.
No.
That's right, and he doesn't have any profession.
No profession. Truck driver.
I didn't realize so many of them were independent, had their own truck.
I hadn't been keeping up with it. When I was driving, there was that was generally the standard. You at least ran your own cab, if not your trailer, too. A lot of times they'd lease the trailer and run your own cab.
They'd pull somebody else's trailer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now they have two trailers.
Yeah, piggybacks, I think.
Piggybacks.
Those are long rascals, too.
Yeah.
See, that was prevalent out west years ago, and it's just now been legalized on these interstate systems.
Oh, is it?
Pulled two of them. And some, I don't know if it's nationwide or not. I know they can pull two in Florida. I've seen them doing that. But see, they're in, if they're just running their own rig, they're in $30,000 into their own rig. So that's pretty healthy monthly payment that they got to make to pay, even if they've got a third down, see. And so they've got a note for $20,000 that they got to meet every month.
On the truck.
And those men got to hustle to do that. See, they got to turn a lot of miles. They don't like to sit down on them. Yes, sir.
And that's why they feel right behind that wheel.
Mm-hmm. Furthermore, they'll buy those trucks just like Paul's wife bought that automobile up there at the thrift station. Entirely whimsical, with no rationale behind it. They spend $30,000 for them. They really will.
They sign on the dotted line.
Mm-hmm. You can't find the first fact among those people that one will agree with the other about a rear end ratio or any other thing. And they sell trucks just like you get a Peterbilt. Well, you're driving the Cadillac. That's it. You know, you big man on the road. You got top truck. Not maybe too much truck for your job. That doesn't matter. You got the top truck.
Uh-huh.
And they'll work for the privilege. There are several guys around this area that they've made a lot of money doing it. Pulling 10 years ago, they were breaking $20,000 a year. And for an uneducated man out of the country, that's good money 10 years ago.
You mean in this country?
Yeah. Lots of
driving money. Truck?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, breaking $20,000 a year.
Right?
Good money. Never home. Never home.
They pay for a truck and a home, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's some smart people in it, you know, that get ahead far enough that they don't get caught on that payment thing. But when, I mean, it's easy to get money to do that, run yourself out trucking. And but then you can lose it just immediately. The last rig I got into, I lost every dime I had because I quit trucking and they just took it over. There's nothing I could do. I couldn't sell it. I got it. It was a used one, but I had to repair it. I rebuilt the engine, and I lost probably $2,000 or $3,000 right there in a few months. I mean, that's small money compared to what these guys talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Easy to do. I know they're hurting bad. They got to be hurting.
And they operate on a small margin, like everybody else.
Well, that's variable. It's a small margin that you got to keep above all the time. Which means that you really, really make money and work, or you go broke and get out. You don't hang around in the middle too much.
Yeah.
Oh.
You've got to, the margin is, I mean, when you get down to that margin, it's too easy to lose. And Mayflower would break his drivers doing them that way.
Yeah.
Running marginal. And, well, when you're putting in that kind of effort, you'd like to, you feel like you should make some money. Hell, 100 hours a week. Good Lord, guy.
100 hours a week?
Yeah, that's what we put in.
My gosh, you make a pretty good sum of money.
Dollar an hour, baby.
Dollar an hour. Yes. That kind of hour.
Yeah, and see, in the furniture business, truckers were allowed to log 70 hours. It's legal. And all over 70 is illegal. Well, I don't know the first trucker on the road that's ever run legal.
Still.
I don't know what's happening recently. But we never run a logbook straight.
Have two of them.
Two of them, or you run your signals when somebody's wave a logbook, and you pull over to the side and stop and fill it in up to a certain point, fake it, leave out a bunch of hours. You see, you got to keep track of where you are when you're truck driving.
Well, I had no notion that they had a limit on how many hours you could drive.
Oh, yes, that's ICC regulations. Well, you see, these truckers, they get paid. The miles is money. And they go crazy. Hell, some of these guys will leave Florida and drive all the way to California and back without ever going to sleep. They're crazy as hell. They eat bennies and things like that. Oh, good Lord. They'll really do it.
It's hard to believe.
Yeah, I never would take any bennies or dexedrines, and I went to sleep and wrecked my truck. Mugging your morality, you know, it catches up with you.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't do that.
Gosh, some of the way some of these trucks have passed me, I think they've got something, you know.
Well, those big diesels, I don't know, it used to be they'd run at 78, Big Macs and everything. And if you come up in the ranks truck driving, you drive wide open, because 10 years before, 51 was my ball head run, you'd run it wide open. So every time you get a new truck, you just run it wide open. And so they get on up in speed in 78, and 87, that was it. Last one I drove would top out at 87. Doesn't matter what you put on it, it'll get up there and do it. And like if you're running all the wheels, double tandems, you can gross 78,000 pounds. And you lose 87 miles an hour. 78,000 pounds.
Oh.
And that's roaring. That's a lot of, and it's really a power thing too. I mean, you're a lord. You're up there.
Do you feel
controlling
the bigness of it?
Sure you do. Yeah. And you can handle those things. I used to get scared when I'd get out of my rig and try to drive the car. I couldn't handle the car. It'd feel flimsy and loose. And I wasn't sure of it. I didn't have mirrors all around me. In the truck, you know what's happening all the way around, all the time. Absolutely.
And you look all the time.
Mm-hmm. You've got really tight control over it. They're good. Truck drivers are good. They got to be good to stay on the road.
Well, who keeps the feather touch on all those implements in there?
You mean the actual driving of the rig?
No, I mean the repair people.
Well, the truck. That's odd, you know, in the automobile business. You go by 5 o'clock someplace and you can't get anything done. Truck driving, you can get in and pull in at 2 o'clock in the morning and get your rig overhauled.
Oh.
24 hours a day, they got mechanics working. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of those really saved me. It was freezing cold up on the Tennessee Turnpike and something blew in my rig. And sure enough, pull off the pike and there's a truck repair place. They fixed me up 4 o'clock in the morning. Hmm. It was cold out there, and the mechanics out there working. I know, it's really different from cars. Mine was a standard gas rig. It wasn't diesel. See, the engine I had in my truck is precisely the same size and horsepower engine that's in this van out here. 135 horsepower. 308 cubic inches displacement, and I could drive 56 miles an hour, pulling 38,000 pounds, and get 6 miles to the gallon. And cars nowadays, pulling 4,000 pounds at 55 miles an hour, get 10 miles to the gallon on my test. News thing tonight. They're going to develop a car by 1984 that gets 20 miles a gallon. And here we're running out of fuel in February.
Yeah.
They're really pushing hard up there.
Get
things straightened out. Hell, Kennedy said, well, we're going to have a man on the moon before the 70s. And, you know, that gave you about 8 years or something, was it?
Yeah.
I don't know that. I've always thought about that truck driving thing. That my truck was the same size engine as this one. Just doesn't add up. That means I should be getting 25 with this truck easy. Cause that's pulling a lot of wind. Big van sticking up there.
Yeah.
And about at least 10 times of my weight is this thing out here.
That's right.
Hmm. Yeah, the repairmen on the truck circuit, I'm trying to think that over because you have problems. There's no doubt about it. But it seemed like all the time that something would get done without the quibbling you have in the automobile business. Maybe it was because they knew it was a business and it had to run and they worked. They got well paid. You don't argue about your money. You don't have piddling bills with truck repairs.
Well, that could be.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't. I blew my engine up in the middle of the desert between Tucson and Phoenix. There's a filling station, a bar, and a motel, and several cactus. And they repaired it there at that filling station. Pulled it out and got a new block. Or no, they used the same block. They had to get some new head and all kinds of stuff. It was about $1,000. They had a shed, a one-car shed like you got out here. Not as big as yours. But the damn fools would put the engine out in the sun and work on it. I never could understand it. And they just hunk around that engine out in the sun, and the shed was sitting over there.
Maybe the sun wasn't as hot as the shed.
Could have been. I was about to die. And it's that 100-degree heat out there.
Yeah. I found that out when we get into that in his 3-car garage out from the sun.
Well, the sun's on it.
Yeah, it kills.
Heat up is no insulation, and that metal sheeting holds the heat.
Well, maybe that was the answer. I know everybody I saw out there was skinny as a rail, and I figured that was so they could stand back of a telephone pole and get in shape. Because that's all you saw out there, the telephone pole. And then, everybody was. You didn't see too many fat people running around out in that desert. They were really skinny people. I can't answer that repair job thing. It was interesting. They've got a big 24-hour place over in Jacksonville. See, they've got all these places for trucks. They're geared for it. You would think they'd have the same bloody thing for cars, but it's a whole different world. You just can't pull off the interstate and know that you're going to get rational treatment at a certain place. You can just pull off.
But you can in a truck.
Generally speaking, that was my feeling. You could expect rational treatment.
And Guy used to say, I don't know whether it's true now because he doesn't eat around like he used to. He used to say one of the best places to eat in the country was a truck stop.
Well,
I guess it's changed.
I got food poisoning in one, so I quit. That was out in Texas. the big ones now I used to eat in. But I, after
coffee.
After I got that food poisoning out in Texas, I just, I couldn't eat anything for 6 months that had any meat or grease in it.
Oh, really?
And I'd just pull my truck into Howard Johnson's and get a milkshake. I'd eat breakfast foods and milkshakes and
really
cheese sandwiches.
You more than that old chili stuff that
was
sitting there.
I don't know what it was, but it sure did it. It was honest to God food poisoning.
In the hot counter.
I just holed up in my truck for 3 days, and I was up in Alamo Proving Ground, that where they did the atomic bomb thing, wherever that, New Mexico or something. Truckers, I don't know how they do it. That is lonely as all get out there. You know, that just reminded me of the loneliness. There you are about to die and nobody gives a damn.
Nobody knows a thing about it.
And what are you going to do? Call home and tell them you're sick and please worry about you? They can't bring you a thing. You're 2,000 miles away.
Now, this reminds me of Miss Patterson. I used to talk to her a good bit about Jehovah's Witness. And it's always a trying on me. But the one subject that I just thought about, it was something that it was just too good to be true. Just to let Ms. Patterson talk about raising beans. Now you see, we've turned from that guru business to this trucking business.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not hard on me at all, but that guru stuff is.
Hell, it's hard on me, guy. It took every laborer out of Nicanopia for a week.
You mean there was an exodus?
There was an exodus. That damn guru did Nicanopia for a whole week. Right in the middle of building campaign in my place, and the building campaign next door, which I'm supervising, and everybody left. All the workers. That's my personal.
They filled the cars.
Yeah.
No one man cars going out there.
No. Uh-uh. It was funny when I got thinking about it. See, he touched me. I've yelled at those people. I didn't know what in the world they were doing going out there.
Let me tell you, now this is what I saw in the countryside. If Willie Chitty can start off with just some little transaction that he was trying to accommodate Lawrence Leitner. There, you know, Lawrence's boy that drinks so much. Mm-hmm. He's one of Buster's buddies, Leitner. Willie can start off with that and keep that going for an hour, and it's sustained. And he never has to think. And he's always, you see, you can tell him, you can tell when he finishes and he's a little pause. They don't mind a pause, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see him take hold again. And it's a narrative. It's once you hear that. Now you see, Buster's not in that. He's not in that culture.
No, he can't sustain that thing like that.
No, he goes in verse. And none of the small town people. It's the countryside. It's the countryside. Tuck Mack can do it, and he could do it when I first knew him before he had the last stroke. And old man Boyd could do it. Now I don't mean when he was old and was rattled, you see.
Mm-hmm.
I mean before that, when he made sense. Now I knew him too when he got rattled.
Mm-hmm.
Now Mr. Weaver can do it in a way, but he's not one of the best. He's mixed up with that barbershop and that small town business, and it modifies it. So he's good, but he's not one of the 100%ers. Well, now that is a part of that's a part of that culture. I've just started using that word culture in the last week or two.
With a capital K.
That's a part of it. that's a part of it. But now you see how you could do them. You could pick up on this thing about keeping your rig moving, you see, and you could go all over the United States. But now, you see, they don't do it deliberately. They just, their minds just get into it, and they are interested in it, and they keep it going. Now, you see, you'd have to do it deliberately.
Mm-hmm.
But you see how it would work, and it's a fascinating thing. And you can now you see what it is. Now you talk about the hunting stories. We worked on those with Mr. Weaver, and you get just a framework of the story. You see, you go out there and let your dogs out, and it was took an hour before they got the dog in the corner. Killed him the way he's there to 2 pounds. That's the backbone of the story. But see, what you do, you've got to put the flesh on the bones. You got to, old man Ed Rush came out there, you see, he dressed and came out there. And you got to get acquainted with the dogs, you see. Here's this three-legged dog, and he wound up right up there with a cat. And the curious thing was, when they got the cat in the corner, the cat was Emily Keep came up there in time to see that the cat was sitting on that three-legged dog fighting others off. And those little incidents and hunting incidents, you see, and all you but your trucking story just goes in for that. And But you got your framework of all of them, but then you see you build them up a little bit, and it just but you build them up because your mind has played on it. That is, you have examined it all, you looked at it. Now that's the thing of it. See, you look at it at the experiences you had. You look at it. That means you examine it, and you don't make a study of it. You just use it, and you look at it best when you're telling it, and you see it grows as you go. It's an automatic thing, and you see what makes talk.
It was interesting.
Now that's what makes talk. Now, if they don't repeat what I said, that's what makes talk. It's experience that's examined, you see, and then you report it, you relate it in a sustained way, and it's not interesting unless it's sustained. Now that's what they do.
They had to have somewhere to do it, though.
I've not been able to. They had their occasions, yes. They had their occasions. But see, I haven't had a chance to find that out. Because you see, all those occasions are gone now. The only way I heard it was, you see, I made the occasion.
Mm-hmm. I'm not too interested in where they did it. I just almost feel that they had to have some place to do that in. Like you said, they don't mind a pause. I have to guard a pause like a bear cat or something. If you feel yourself about to pause when you're talking most generally, you just well throw in the towel because somebody's going to jump in there and not only interrupt you, change the subject totally.
So now that's what I've seen.
Debbie seems to have quite an admiration for her.
Yes. She's never seen her really, Patterson. Just sort of a hulk of a person. That's left. So much, you see, Gloria's gone with that disability that she has. But that's where the power was. But now that's one of the things. And you can't quite represent it on paper. The language itself is speech, it's spoken language.
Can't fit it at all.
Absolutely not. You see the spoken language. You've got the inflection, and all. It has such a great flexibility to it, and the meanings you see. There's meanings all along. It's not the meanings of the word. It's the meanings of the
mm-hmm.
inflection.
Mm-hmm.
Besides that, you see, the written language is pretty flat. And see, I've listened to it hour after hour now, several years, until I've really, you see, the school language and the written language is a little hard on me.
Hell, that'll fracture you for that university.
Yeah.
The people up there, this stuff makes them boring.
Yeah.
The thing that you're into.
Yeah.
Makes them untenable.
Yeah. I know, they've always been fractured for me at this particular campus. And this the last talk. I don't know what I'll do now. I may just get me a literary agent. Something will come up. I've always hit dead ends just periodically. And look like, well, that's winds it up. But something always turns up. If you just don't push it, you see, it'll come to you. See, I've written 3 books since I've been off last November. And had these flatheads out here all the time.
Hell, I thought you were still trying to chapterize this talk thing. You hadn't even been into something else.
Well, you take...
Well, I mean, even related things. I thought that you were putting...
It's all related.
Sure, I imagine it is.
And see, this last thing... is that stuff Debbie wrote when she came back on her French experience. Well... I finally got around to it and made something. And use it as a springboard for the countryside. I don't know who's going to read all that foolishness.
You think about writing the first word and you go to one of these libraries or bookstores, you sort of despair, don't you? enjoy letter writing if I can find the right people to write to. That's always
yeah.
Just, see, that gives a direction to the writing, and you don't try to carry it behind beyond your one audience, but you've got the one audience.
If you had a little better audience over there yourself, it'd be nice. But of course, you know, you take what you got.
Yeah, none of those people are in touch on the world that you have.
Well, it's that. No, they're not in that world. No.
I'll tell you, some of them have been touched by it, guy.
Yeah.
Very definitely, because some of them have a little inkling about what's going on with the talk scene.
Yeah. Well, you're watching, you know.
Well, even Mimi, as lightly as she may use her mind, has really been affected by it. She gets bored easily. She does. She it's right interesting. People don't have to know a lot about it, guy. If there's somebody there that see, I'm about one tenth as involved as you are in it, but I can open it up.
Yeah.
What little bit I know,
yeah.
I can sort of open it up for other people, and it, damned if it doesn't affect them.
Yeah.
That's what's interesting to me about the whole subject, to start with, the thing that you're dealing with, that it has an effect on a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you get exposed to it.
Yeah.
It's not like learning, hell, I don't know what to say. I started to say Shakespeare. That'd be unfair for me, because I saw, what's his name, the Shakespeare man at school, Herbert. Shakespeare obviously affected him.
You don't know whether Shakespeare or Herbert.
No.
Okay.
He'd sure preach it, though. But there are things that you learn and get exposed to them, but they don't affect you too much. And I feel like if anybody understands the talk situation, the whole thing it's about, it just changes your attitude to some extent. Maybe that's why it's be a very difficult subject to get across. People don't like change.
You know, it's amazing what direction things take. But I got into this through Emerson. Now that's hard to believe that Emerson would take anyone in this direction.
If you go back, and I've done it here recently, I read just a little bit of Emerson not too long ago. There's definitely a connection, guy. And I feel that's why people don't read Emerson now. Because it's closer to this thing that you speak of than it is to the scholastic heads in the academic world.
Well,
I don't know. This is just, I was thinking about that last time I read Emerson. Just pure pleasure reading.
We ought to get a few together and read Emerson every now and then. I picked up so much more about it, you see, than I knew when basis of those things in the fit is now you see he was repudiated for the American scholar. You see, would rise above an institution, and then the Venice School of Dress, the minister would rise above the ministry, and then self-reliance took it in other directions, and all of them affected an institution. Well, the upholders of the institutions, he repudiated him. And those were his great pieces. That was what floated him. That's what all of his bringing up and living Well, he had to double backtrack and leave that. But that's the heart of Emerson. The part of it, you see, that affects me is that feeling that an institution, you see, is still an institution, and it takes a great burden off your mind just to know that what goes on up here, you see, is just made up. It's not actually serious. It's just the best we can do. And you want to go ahead and help it if you can, you see. You don't pull it down. But you know that it's a goddamn institution, and there's no use taking it too seriously. Now, you see what a burden that takes off you. When you go home at night, all that stuff.
Well, I was in something the other just last few hours talking about people.